Welcome to The Startup Show. I'm your host, John Biggs. In every episode of The Startup Show, we talk to an amazing entrepreneur about how they do what they do. We'll explore tactics, tricks, and techniques for building some of the coolest things on the planet. Thanks for listening and enjoy. Welcome to The Startup Show. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Vitaly Golom. He's the founder of Sophie Labs. Welcome, Vitaly. This is we haven't talked in a long time.
Thanks, Sean. Good to see you.
So this is a new startup that you guys are working on. Tell me about this thing.
This is a new startup. So back in my corporate venture days at HP, now 8 years ago or so, during the heydays of chatbots, you know, it got me started thinking about how is this going to change, you know, really kind of this future of work theme. And here we are a little bit later, second wave, and teamed up with a very good friend of mine, Jonathan Romley, who is also experienced. I had a couple of interesting exits in AI labs, let's say, mm-hmm. in the last 2 years, in computer vision. And we decided to form a labs, hence the name, in exploring commercial applications of autonomous agents. And what we have put together and have been testing for a few months now, and now starting to talk about more publicly, is something that looks like the future of the CRM. Okay. And it actually replaces a lot of the human function and puts automation into the grunt work of sales.
So I want to put together, I don't know, a list of leads. This thing will do it for me, and then it'll reach out for me, all that other good stuff. Or what's the?
So actually, quite the opposite. So there are a lot of companies that jumped on this kind of, we call it, you know, AI spam, and you're getting a lot of these hope these email finds you wells in your inbox these days, and that's largely that. But the reality is, you know, if you've ever built a sales operation doing kind of cold outreach, your chances of catching the right person at the right time are very, very low. Mm-hmm. So it's much better to create a magnet and have them come to you. And that's what a proper marketing function does in a mature sales operation. So we are kind of, you know, if you look at, you know, there's a marketing operation on top that brings in the leads. There are the junior salespeople, the inbound SDRs that qualify those leads. And there are the account executives that pitch the product and try to close the customer. So that middle layer of the sandwich, the cheese or the ham in that sandwich, the inbound SDRs, is what we're effectively automating, where it could be, you know, potentially we could replace them altogether. But in a lot of times what we're hearing from our pilot participants is that they're trying to scale operations. And this is actually the most painful place for them, because to recruit, hire, train, and retain these junior salespeople, which are oftentimes or almost always, you know, straight out of college, first job into sales, they're not very good. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult. And that's kind of the biggest churn when you're trying to scale a sales operation, is bringing in this kind of fresh talent that then, you know, 2/3 of them burn out and they just don't perform and they go on to do something else. And 1/3 of them, they, you know, they stick around for maybe 6 or 12 months and then they become account executives and you start the whole thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting question. How do you, so let's say you say that the SDRs or whoever, these junior salespeople come in, it's hard to train them, hard to get them up to speed. But how do you get a experienced salesperson if you don't have a completely awful junior one?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, you have sales training programs that will change, because this grunt work, just like, you know, in investment banking that I spent the last 6 or 7 years of my life, you have analysts coming in and working 100, 120 hours a week. You know, you can say that's a training program, but really it's kind of the manure shoveling of the industry. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of grunt work that can be avoided. It's not really necessary. There are different, better ways to train people. And if they really want to build a career in sales, they'll just have kind of a longer gestational period, let's say. And their entry point might not be, you know, jumping in after 2 weeks of training, but going through a training program for several months and coming in kind of slightly different level.
Interesting. Yeah, that's always been the question. I mean, it's the idea of the autonomous truck driver. Like, what does an autonomous truck driver do at some point? Like, do they just sit there and read a book while the thing drives around, or is there nobody in the car at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic example, and I've been talking about that for years now, because I've been involved in mobility, and that's one of the key areas. Like, truck drivers are the number one profession by volume. I think it's like 9 million truck drivers in the mm-hmm. U.S., but there's always a shortage. And they don't stick around, right? They average tenure is like 10 months at a company, and they get recruited to another one. And it's exceedingly expensive. It's a big cost center. So, you know, theoretically people talk about, oh, what's going to happen when we have autonomous driving, but in reality, it's going to take a generation to really mm-hmm. replace that profession. And in the meantime, you know, it's an area where we're having a big labor shortage. And same thing in, you know, kind of professional sales, let's say software sales or what have you that we're dealing with. It's the same issues that finding that talent is one of the key pain points.
Okay. Why did you guys do another startup? I mean, you've done VC, you've done a bunch of stuff. They're older than most of the startup folks that we're used to talking to. Yeah. I'm not saying anything, but
yeah, I'm still a year or two younger than the average age of a public company CEO.
Yeah.
So we've got a little running room, but yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I like to say for the last like 9 years since I exited my last company, my last startup in 2015, I've been kind of having a vacation on the dark side of the table, mm-hmm. first in corporate venture and then investment banking. But you know, it's the right time. And that's the most important thing, right? That we learn with startups is timing is the most important thing. Being too early is actually worse than being too late.
Yep.
In a sense, and getting the timing right is key. And it's hard to ignore that this is really kind of the next big wave and where we get an opportunity to use new generation of technology to solve the same old problems, but do it 10 times faster, better, cheaper. So you're going to have a lot of new entrants that come in and take over and kind of, you know, this keyword disruption is disrupting markets. The old ways of doing things, you know, the old CRMs, you name it, are going to go away because, you know, the way we see it is like, CRM is a pain in the ass, but it's a necessary one for every company. But the way it's designed is really for processing a lot of raw data by humans. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about automation that's coming in and it can do kind of this logic much, much faster, much better, that whole concept is going to change, right? It's going to be kind of a black box of magic. And you tell that black box, you know, here are my marketing channels, here's my product, here's how my sales process should work, and here's what a qualified prospect looks for me. And out the other end, you have appointments that are set up for your salespeople. It's still, you know, there's still a human element in sales always, especially with kind of larger products that you don't just add to a shopping cart, but automating and making their life easier is really important. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, another aspect is that when automation, you know, comes onto the scene and it's doing so now, it becomes an arms race. And if your competitors are using this automation, it's a huge leverage point. If you don't use it, you just won't be able to compete. So it's really interesting. You know, it's not just one company is going to get an advantage, but it's going to be this whole shift to a very different sales process. In our case, you know, other automation in other types of businesses along the way as well.
What do you know now that you didn't know before for your previous startups?
Oh, man. I've been on the other side of the sausage factory, right? So I understand how decisions are made. You know, we made all the mistakes. The biggest one, if you want to put me on the spot, is with my last startup, we were really trying hard to educate our customer. Meaning, okay, here's a vitamin, here's what's good for you. Mm-hmm. My last startup was selling e-commerce software, one of the first in the printing industry, where our average customer was a 57-year-old white guy with a high school education that didn't realize that he's running a manufacturing business with yield as a key term. And all they wanted was more sales, more top of the funnel. And it took us a while to figure out, like, look, let's stop swimming against the stream here and just give them what they want. Mm-hmm. So this time around, I would say I've learned that lesson. My co-founder, Jonathan, has learned that lesson several times over as well. And we are going with the flow, trying to get the timing right and talking to the audience and giving them what they need and presenting it in a way that they can better understand that it aligns with their goals more than anything.
Interesting. Is it easier or harder to raise right now? What's the situation?
It's cost of capital is very high, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, if you look at kind of down the chain, in 2013, new fund managers, new VCs raised $13 billion. In 2023, they raised $1 billion. Mm-hmm. So you can see kind of there's a choke point in venture, and there's a flight to quality in a sense that for large venture funds, it's easy to raise obscene amounts of capital. It's much more difficult for newer investors who usually do the first rounds, you know, take the risk, et cetera. So I'll say on balance, kind of the conditions are harder. But when you break through and you're on theme, and the theme right now is generative AI, obviously for everything, then, you know, when you prove yourself a little bit, it's easier. It's been much easier in past years where, you know, companies were raising a lot of money pretty consistently on an idea. Now you have this kind of reaction where, you know, investors want to see proof points. And there, it was a seller's market for over 10 years, for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And now there's kind of this opposite reaction where VCs can afford to wait and they know the deals are not going to go away. So from that perspective, it's harder. From another perspective, what's interesting is that, you know, we thought that our experience, our network is going to make things a little bit easier. But in reality, you know, what's happened instead is that the standards and the expectations from experienced founders are a lot higher. So we funded this company ourselves up to this point, more or less. And we are getting those proof points to where, you know, next steps will be to go out to the market and kind of scale up from there.
Is that what you would recommend for startups right now, that they should fund stuff themselves?
It depends on your situation. Mm-hmm. If you're fresh out of college and this is your rent money and food money, no, don't do that. Because one of the most important things, you know, early on, when you don't have context, when you don't have the experience and the objectivity, raising money from others is a proof point. It's a validation that you have a vision, right? If you can convince one other person, it's a vision. If you can't, it's a hallucination. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to understand that either you're hallucinating and you can't convince anybody that this is a worthy idea. Certainly, if you can't convince investors, you're not going to be able to convince customers. You should, you know, listen to hive mind that tells you something, the environment tells you something, and not go broke on your idea. Okay. You know, that's probably 90% of the time. If you're experienced and you want to get further along and you know what you're doing and you kind of understand the signals and you can risk that capital without, you know, affecting your family, then yeah, get a little bit further down the road, get to first customers, first revenue, and then go out to market.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Would you do another startup after this one? If it like either way, if it succeeds or fails,
you know, as a cancer survivor, mm-hmm. I can tell you that, you know, I had a bit of a scare around my 40th birthday. And it kind of wakes you up to workaholicism, mm-hmm. and what's really important to you. Because and then all of a sudden, when that word gets thrown at you, you start thinking very differently. Like, you know, time's up, potentially. So you start thinking about all the things you want to do. You know, work for a lot of people gives them the validation, and a lot of people in the startup world especially have kind of an unhealthy relationship with work, where mm-hmm. their personal identity gets wrapped up with their startup's identity, and that's all they do, that's all they're known for, that's all they think about. And oftentimes, you know, most startups fail, so for those people it's a big personal failure and they don't know what to do with themselves. They have a kind of crisis of personality. It's really important to understand that work is work, and you have these ideas, and to think about this more as like a scientist, where you're going to run experiments, and a startup is an experiment. And if it works out, great. If it doesn't, you do something else, and you don't let it personally affect you. And you know, another thing, as you get older, you're supposed to create multiple streams of revenue, so you can, you know, not have to rely on any one thing, mm-hmm. To support your family and your lifestyle, etc. So then you can actually play and be a little bit more more risky with the startups. So kind of long answer, you know, very likely that I'll, you know, keep doing different things, different projects, exploring, you know, I'm on a couple of boards and I get a lot of different satisfaction from that. But we kind of told ourselves, you know, as guys in our 40s with kids, you know, we're going to really push on this one, and we think we have the timing right and we have the right idea and the execution so far, and the results are telling us that we're on the right track. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, I don't know if this one for some reason doesn't work out, you can ask me again.
Yeah. I mean, there's like Walmart greeter. You could be a Walmart greeter. That's good for us old guys. Yeah.
I have a dream of, you know, operating a taco truck on the beach in Mexico.
Oh yeah. See, that would be amazing. Right. Yeah, exactly. I want to make meatloaf in Potsdam, New York. I think that would be actually.
I can't cook to save my life, but this idea of running a taco truck on a surf beach in Mexico.
Yeah. It's tacos. Well, Vitaly, thank you for joining us. This has been cool. It's nice to see a startup that's just starting out. What's the website?
SofieLabs.com, SofieLabs.com. And you can sign up for our pilot. We're looking for companies that want to try it out. Obviously, pilot's free. And they already have sales operations and a sales playbook. That's really important for us to be able to train our systems. that will then work on your behalf 24 hours a day in 35 languages and engage with your customers.
All right, perfect. This has been the Startup Show. I'm John Biggs. We'll see you next episode.